Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light. 1 year ago, the Jewish Theological Seminary of America inaugurated a series of dramatic radio programs drawn from the storehouse of Jewish learning and tradition. Our second year of radio dramatizations begins today with Morton Wishengrad's story of Solomon Schechter, the man who, 50 years ago, unearthed a vast treasure of hidden manuscripts more fabulous than the wealth of ancient kings. The anniversary of this event is soon to be commemorated throughout the world. The Eternal Light now presents William Podmore as Solomon Schechter and Ann Sterrett as his wife.
His eyes were quite blue, and his beard was quite red. He had a most unrabbinical temper, and when he swore, which was quite frequent, it was like a catalog of biblical prophets. He was terribly untidy. He used his vest for an ashtray, and the house was a chaos of manuscripts and books. It was 1890, and he was lecturer in rabbinics at Cambridge University in England. His name was Solomon Schechter, and I was his wife. Something about Schechter irresistible to men of learning. Our house was rich in friendships. Israel Zangwill, the writer, Father Nolan, who came to argue the apostles against the rabbis, Professor Haddon, the anthropologist, James Fraser, the author of The Golden Bough, and the Reverend Charles Taylor, master of St. John's College. Schechter quarreled with them by turns, taught them by turns, and warmed them constantly with his wit and affection. We were very poor, but the Cambridge library was filled with books, and we felt no lack. Once, I recollect, a student came to see Schechter to say goodbye.
What's this nonsense about goodbye, Matthew, as you haven't completed your studies?
I can't afford to stay on, Dr. Schechter.
That's absurd. We can't afford to lose you.
Thank you, sir.
How much do you need?
Please, sir, I didn't come for that.
How much do you need, Matthews?
I can't accept your help, sir.
Not my help at all. I have charge of a college fund for students who need assistance, sir.
You have, Dr. Schechter?
Now, how much do you need?
Are you sure, sir?
Will £50 be enough?
Thank you, Dr. Schechter. I don't know what to say.
Well, just forget this nonsense about leaving. Tilda.
Yes?
Please give Mr. Matthew £50.
£50?
Of course. If you both excuse me, there's some work I have to do. I see you in class, Matthew. Come now, Tilda, you don't have to look so anxious. It was only £50.
It was nearly all we had. Why did you do it, Solomon?
That's a fine scholar. He's going to be a fine minister someday.
Well, why didn't you refer him to the Episcopal Church Fund?
Matthews is proud. He wouldn't take charity.
It wouldn't be charity. He could pay it back once they found him a pulpit.
Let's not talk about it, Tilda.
I don't understand it. You're the only Jew on the faculty. It would be different if you were rich.
Mrs. Schechter, no man has a right to more than bread and water and fuel for his stove, as long as the poor are not provided with the necessaries of life.
But this wasn't a necessity at all. It wasn't for bread. It was for tuition.
Learning is a necessity of life, children. Now stop fretting. It's unbecoming.
Schechter needed a new greatcoat. That winter and the next, he had to wear his old one. When I complained, he bristled.
Tilda, I'm a scholar. You can't be everything if you want to be anything.
I knew he was right, but he did need a new coat. Oh, Schechter wasn't a saint.
He detested what he called mental squinting. He loved Matthews, who was a Christian, because Matthews was an honest scholar. Once a would-be scholar bored him for 2 whole days until he couldn't stand it any longer.
Sir, the vocal organs were not meant to cover up ignorance.
But Dr. Schechter, Maimonides says
that... Excuse me, sir, you know as much about Maimonides as a monkey in a cage knows about evolution. Now, must you stay?
But I wanted you to discuss this passage in Nietzsche.
You'll do very well. It doesn't require deep thinking to misunderstand Nietzsche. Your hat, sir.
I'm afraid, Dr. Schechter, you don't appreciate my scholarship.
On the contrary, my dear sir, you have the encyclopedic ignorance of the highly uneducated. The door, sir. I have an important paper to write. Please excuse me. And try not to fall down the stairs.
I made him send a note of apology. We argued about it for a whole day. He grumbled like a bear and began his note.
My wife informs me I have been a boor. I beg my pardon.
That won't do.
No?
Schechter, you apologize decently.
All right. Sir, it has been my observation that one must love people very much in order not to hate them.
Schechter?
What's the matter, Tilda?
Solomon Schechter, you're the most exasperating, the most prejudiced man I've ever married.
Tilda, a man can't carry on the business of life without prejudices. My prejudice is that I'm a Hebrew and I fear the Lord God.
You've offended that man.
I tried for 2 days, but it seemed to make no impression.
He's probably so heartsick now he won't be able to eat for a week.
Oh, no, Tilda. He's a very holy man, full of misquoted scriptures. But I think he's still got room for a good dinner, which he will eat with great devotion.
Solomon Schechter, are you or are you not going to send that man a civil note of apology?
But it might encourage him to be a rabbi. Think of what a horrible example of red tape Judaism he would be.
Solomon Schechter.
All right, my dear. Hand me the Bible.
What do you want it for?
I want to verify the passage that begins, "I am looking for my father's ashes."
Oh, hopeless, Schechter. I throw my hands up.
Do you, Tilda?
I emphatically do.
In that case, give me another sheet of paper. I'll write a note of apology.
That was very characteristic of Solomon Schechter. The only grievances he ever nursed were those against himself. And while Cambridge and London knew and admired him as the foremost Talmudical authority in the West, I knew him and loved him as a very shy human man who was intoxicated with God. From all over the world, scholars sent precious manuscripts to Cambridge. Ancient manuscripts, in Hebrew, in Aramaic, in Coptic. And Schechter studied them under his glass and wrote his opinion. Once, I recall, he uttered his creed to Dr. Taylor and to Father Nolan.
Every discovery of an ancient document giving evidence of a bygone world, if undertaken in the right spirit, that is, for the honor of God and the truth, is an act of resurrection in miniature.
Solomon Schechter believed that the Jewish ministry must be concerned with Jewish scholarship, and nothing distressed him more than what he called platform Judaism. Many congregations offered him rabbinical posts, but he preferred to remain at Cambridge, living precariously on the meager pay of a lecturer. He published his studies of the Talmud, and to a small group throughout the world, he was a famous man. Now a larger group was to hear of him. It began in May 1896. Two of our dearest friends, Margaret Gibson and Agnes Lewis, had just returned from the Near East. Now, Agnes Lewis held 2 ancient fragments of Hebrew manuscript out to him.
Mrs. Lewis, where did you find this?
Margaret and I bought them from a book dealer in Jerusalem.
Oh, please, handle it carefully.
What is it?
This one, this is a fragment of the ancient Jerusalem Talmud. But it's this one.
This scrap of paper?
Yes, Mrs. Lewis, this scrap of paper. Listen, I'll translate. The wise man will seek out the wisdom of all the ancients and will be occupied in prophecies. He will serve among great men.
Dr. Schechter, you seem very agitated.
Mrs. Lewis, this is a fragment from the Hebrew book of Ben Sira, the book Ecclesiasticus of the Apocrypha.
Is it very important?
The only original in existence is the Greek translation. Mrs. Lewis, the Hebrew original has been missing for 1,000 years. More than 1,000 years.
You're sure this is from it?
As sure as there is a God in Israel. I think I know where this came from. There can be only one place.
Jerusalem?
No, not Jerusalem. The writings were destroyed by Titus in 70 A.D. The place must be the Geniza of Cairo.
Geniza, Dr. Schechter?
Yes, Mrs. Lewis, Geniza. The Geniza is a hiding place for old books and manuscripts. Among the Jews, holy books are never destroyed. When they are torn or worn out, they're buried in the ground or hidden away. And we know there is a Geniza in Cairo. There can be no other place, Mrs. Lewis.
But if this is as old as you say, it would have decomposed by now.
Not in the dry Egyptian air. Mrs. Lewis, I must get the rest of Ecclesiasticus. I must go to Cairo, Dr. Taylor.
How do you know you'll find anything, Dr. Schechter?
I don't know. But if my assumption is correct, there's a treasure of hidden manuscripts in Cairo.
Well, I'm sure the university will grant you a leave.
I have no funds, sir.
Oh, you do, Schechter. You have all the funds I have.
I knew you'd say that, Dr. Taylor. That's why I came to you.
I'll talk to Professor McAllister and Professor Sidgwick. They'll supply what I don't have.
Thank you, sir. But, yes, we must keep this absolutely secret. Every unscrupulous book dealer and collector in the Orient will be following me. For them, this represents more wealth than the pyramids of the pharaohs. We must find the manuscripts, sir, and preserve them for science.
Taylor was as good as his word. For many years, it had been known that somewhere in Egypt there was a careful campaign of pilfering from some secret storehouse. And Schechter was staking his reputation on the fact that the storehouse was Cairo. Taylor found the money. Schechter bid us all a hurried goodbye and sailed to Egypt. Schechter laid his groundwork carefully. The first man he saw was the chief rabbi.
Dear Tilda, I burn with impatience, but I must win the chief rabbi to my side. I flirt with him by the hour and am taking Arabic lessons 3 times a week. You see how practical your old man is.
His letters came every day, reporting slow progress.
The rabbi is very kind to me. He took me to the Cairo synagogue, where I suspect the Geniza is located. I'm afraid I nearly disgraced you. My foot caught against a cobblestone, and I uttered an Anglo-Saxon monosyllable which begins with a D and ends with an N.
Did you say something, Dr. Schechter?
Oh, nothing at all, Rabbi, nothing at all.
I thought I heard you say something in English.
Just a little word, Rabbi.
Well, you must explain its meaning then, Dr. Schechter.
Rabbi, we have a word in the English language, a little word of one syllable, which is full of theological meaning and is used as a sort of charm against things that annoy us.
Oh, is that all? I thought for a moment you were swearing.
Merely theologically, my dear Rabbi.
Oh, I see. Well, Dr. Schechter, this is the Cairo Synagogue. I know every room here. And I'm afraid you've come for nothing.
Do you mind if I make my own inspection?
Not at all, Dr. Schechter. I've asked the beadle to assist you. I hope you find what you're looking for, but Dr. Schechter, I strongly doubt that it's here.
Beadle.
Yes?
This wall is hollow.
Oh, no, it can't be.
Listen. Definitely, it's hollow.
Nothing of the sort, Dr. Schechter. Oh, please come this way. We'll try the basement. Yes, you.
I don't believe I know your name, sir.
That's all right. I have some advice to give you.
Yes, very kind of you. What advice, sir?
Return to England.
I have no intention of returning.
That's very unfortunate. The climate of Egypt can be rather unwholesome for foreigners.
I see.
I've taken the liberty to book passage for you. A few of my friends have gotten up a thirst to give you.
Your friends are extremely generous.
Merely public-spirited.
Thank you again, sir. But if you don't mind, I rather like Cairo.
Now, that's a question. Dr. Schechter likes Cairo. The question is, though, does Cairo like Dr. Schechter?
That's the man, Rabbi.
Oh, I know him. He's a speculator in rare books.
Do you still believe that I've come on a wild goose chase?
I'm beginning to change my mind. Dr. Schechter.
Yes, Rabbi?
Only the beadle and I know that you are looking for a secret hoard of manuscripts.
Excuse me, Rabbi. Only you, the beadle, and the book dealer.
That's my point. I didn't tell the book dealer.
Rabbi, if you don't mind, I think I should like to pay a visit to our friend the beadle. That doesn't sound hollow to you, does it, Beadle?
No, Dr. Schechter, it doesn't.
Listen again, Beadle. That doesn't sound hollow.
I can't say it does.
Then get me a pickaxe. I'm going to find out.
Oh, don't be stubborn, Dr. Schechter.
That's what the book dealers think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they think. That's what I think.
Why don't you help me save the synagogue from desecration? I don't want to break the wall. How do you get in?
The way you will get into Gehenna.
I'm sorry you won't help me, Beadle. But that doesn't matter. I'll manage myself, somehow.
The synagogue at Cairo employed a new beadle the next day. Schechter wrote me about it, and I cabled him to be careful. He was careful.
Here, Kitty. A nice bowl of milk. No, not so fast, Kitty. It may give you indigestion. Rabbi, Rabbi, quick, an emetic, quick. Quick, Rabbi, your cat's been poisoned.
Well, the salt did it, Dr. Schechter. I think she's all cleaned up.
I've sent for a veterinary, Rabbi. I'm afraid you nearly had a dead kitten.
And a dead scholar.
Apparently, the Egyptian climate does disagree with foreigners.
What are you going to do, Dr. Schechter? Shall we have the book dealer arrested?
No, there's nothing we can prove. There's only one way to stop him.
Just tell me. I'll take the necessary steps.
I'll have to take the steps. Rabbi, I'll trouble you for a pickaxe.
Look, Rabbi, look. It's a room.
More than a room, Rabbi. Be careful of the masonry. See, a hole in the ceiling and a ladder. That's how they got in.
Can you see through the dust, Dr. Schechter?
I don't have to see, Rabbi.
No?
No, I know. This is the secret storehouse of Cairo, the built-over part of the ancient synagogue. Rabbi, here is our treasure chest, the Geniza of Cairo.
I could barely decipher his writing now, for the penmanship was worse than usual. It was feverish. I knew that Solomon Schechter had made a great discovery. Mrs. Lewis and Dr. Taylor had a cable, and our hearts and hopes were with Schechter in the airless, windowless Geniza of Cairo.
Schechter! Where are you, Schechter? In the name of God, man, you can't remain here day and night. It's stifling. Look at this thermometer, Schechter. 110 degrees.
Only 110 degrees, Rabbi. But 100,000 precious manuscripts. 100,000 lost manuscripts of an ancient Hebrew civilization.
Read on, Mrs. Schechter.
Ragged scraps of writing to make the hearts of European scholars glad. For centuries, whitewash has tumbled upon them from walls and ceilings. The sand of the desert has lodged in their folds and wrinkles. Water has drenched them. They have squeezed and hurt each other. Whilst all the time, some of them were keeping for us very precious secrets. Give Dr. Taylor my great and abiding affection. As soon as I know what I have, I am bringing my treasure back to Cambridge. Praise be to God.
Is that the end?
Yes. That's the end of the letter.
But it's a beginning. A new beginning for Hebrew scholarship.
Solomon Schechter returned with his manuscript. He returned with one of the great discoveries in modern times. But he returned an old man. His eyes were filmed, his beard was fringed with white. Days and nights in an airless room under the blazing Egyptian sun had taken their toll. His lungs were thick with the dust and residue of centuries. He had burrowed like a mole, breathing it in hour after hour, day after day. And he knew that he had shortened a useful life by many years. But Solomon Schechter did not grieve. He was supremely happy.
Tilda?
Yes?
Will you ask Dr. Taylor if he can step by? I think I'm well enough to see him.
All right. I'll send Dr. Taylor a note.
You're happy, Tilda, aren't you?
I rejoice to have you back.
Tilda. Tilda, whatever is in your mind, understand one thing.
Yes?
There is a rabbinical injunction. Every age must make its own contribution to the Temple of Truth.
All right.
If it does not make its contribution, it must consider itself false to truth and to learning. Tilda.
Yes?
I thank God he has given me strength to make my contribution.
Please rest. Please. I'll send for Dr. Taylor.
I know there's no need to thank you again. The manuscripts speak for me, Taylor.
I understand. What will you do with them, Schechter? The decision is yours.
No, Taylor.
Schechter, you don't mean you're going to sell them? Oh, I apologize. I have no right to tell a man in your financial position what to do.
How many millions of pounds do you think they are worth?
It's a very great fortune, Schechter. That's all I can say.
That makes me supremely happy. Take it, Dr. Taylor. The manuscripts belong to Cambridge University.
You know what you're doing?
Yes. Dr. Taylor, I was born in Romania. When I was a little boy and came from the cradle, my body was covered with blood and with bruises. See, I was a Jew. And then I went to Austria. There I found the higher anti-Semitism that does not bruise the flesh, but lacerates the soul. In England, I found happiness, a place to work. If you don't mind, Dr. Taylor, I want these manuscripts for Cambridge University and for England.
He was a man like a lion, and he recovered. But now he was an aged lion. His beard was white, but his eyes were still blue. And when his tongue grew caustic, I knew that whatever had been taken from his life in years, nothing had been taken from his mind. We found much happiness in Cambridge. And when the call came from America, Solomon Schechter and I went to New York, where he became the second president of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. England and America, they were the countries he loved. And I, Matilda Schechter, I love them also with all my soul.
Copies of the script you have just heard, together with the talk which follows immediately, may be obtained free of cost by writing to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present Dr. Louis M. Epstein, Rabbi of Temple Kehilith Israel, Brookline, Massachusetts, who will speak to you from Boston. Dr. Epstein.
Thirty years now after the death of Solomon Schechter, I delight in going back to the memory of my first visit with that inspiring personality. And today, even as then, I am puzzled by that experience. I sought admission to the Jewish Theological Seminary to be trained for the rabbinate. He did not ask me to come to his office, nor require me to stand an examination, but he invited me for tea in his home. We talked about the East Side, college athletics, his son Frank, and when the tea party was over, he announced to me, "Young man, you're admitted as a student in the seminary. Send your credentials to the registrar." My student is under his instruction. Brought the same whimsical Schechter into the center of my intellectual sphere through the classroom and his many published works. I knew him to be a scholar of meticulous care to matter of detail, punctilious and accurate to the highest. Yet I found him cutting corners, so to speak, to reach the truth with a sweeping glance, without tortuous deductions, without laborious details. When he did that, he was the magnificent Schechter of impetuosity, of wit, of sharp tongue, of penetrating insight. There he was, the creative scholar, endowing the past of his people with life and meaning. There, too, I felt, he made his sensitive scholarly decisions over a cup of tea rather than over an examination paper. There is a sense of truth that supersedes deductive reasoning, which Halevi calls the Inyan Elohi, the divine thing. Some form of this divine thing belongs to men who can see the whole before they see the parts, who have an intuitive sense of truth and reality. Schechter sought that quality in the brilliant faculty which he built up for the seminary. He sought that quality in the students whom he trained for the rabbinate. It was that divine thing that gave color, yea, glamour to his personality. And it was by this gift that he attained leadership in American Jewry practically from the first moment he stepped on American soil. Dr. Schechter had been in this country for only 5 years when I first met him. Yet he was then already regarded as the authority on American Jewish life, its keenest critic and its soundest guide. Out of the close to 60 years of the seminary's existence, he was its president for only 13 years. Nevertheless, Jews today, 3 decades after his death, speak of it as the Schechter Seminary. The graduates of today, born after Schechter's death, will share with my generation of graduates the honor of being known as Schechterians. In every sense, we are. All of us of the seminary family are links in the golden chain of tradition, fashioned and made vital by an unusual personality, Solomon Schechter.
Thank you, Dr. Epstein. Today's script was written by Morton Wishengrad and featured William Podmore as Solomon Schechter and Ann Sterrett as Matilda, his wife. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Cantor Robert H. Siegel of the Beacon Street Temple, Brookline, Massachusetts, sang the liturgical music. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. The Eternal Light is presented as a public service by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. The program is prepared by the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. You may obtain free copies of today's script by writing to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.